election. Some of us can't respond to exactly which programs that we'll have these cutbacks on. Representative Carney?
Another idea, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hogan perhaps could help me answer this. On page 2, line 29, where it talks about the effective date, if we were to say that the act, this act takes effect upon upon agreement between the budget office and the governor of the items to be funded, wouldn't that cover the problem?
I missed that.
Would you repeat that, please?
Page 2, line 29, where section 7, where it says this act takes effect immediately in accordance with AS 0110, et cetera. If we said that this act takes effect upon agreement between the budget and audit and the governor that which program shall be funded, wouldn't that then tie the effective date of this, both these, I'm talking about the appropriation too, wouldn't that then tie the effective date to the agreement of both parties, which then would keep it from being spent without?
Mr. Hogan, you respond to that on section 7?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know what that would do. It's a new area. There's one possible thing you might want to keep in mind, that unfortunately, getting back to what Representative Meekins said, we have lost decisively several times on this issue. If you appear grossly to be doing something, in other words, trying to bootstrap your way into a position that you're not authorized to hold, a court will probably be encouraged to see through that and strike the provision down. To use an effective date to attempt to gain a decision-making position that you can't otherwise gain would probably be perceived as something like that. That's my first reaction to it. Again, the question is time. There isn't a lot of time involved here, so maybe nobody would argue about it, but then again, maybe they would.
Further questions? Representative Meekins?
Well, again, this is just an unusual piece of legislation. This isn't the key thing that budget and audit does. You know, they authorize additional federal money that we didn't know about, generally speaking, to revise programs and add that money to do things in the state that weren't around during the budget process. You know, we've always had the authority to say you cannot. What we do in the budget bill that gets us into trouble is we say the governor has the authority to receive and expend all federal funds. Now, we have the approach. We lost part of the court case, but we won part of the court case. It was definitely established that we're the only ones that are going to appropriate money. It was also definitely established that he was the only one that could, spend it. And we can't delegate to a subcommittee our powers of appropriation. That's why the Budget and Audit Committee can't do it. We could always meet in special session and authorize it. We could right now, we have the option to delegate all where that $20 million is going. If we knew, if we had enough information, we could sit there and do, that's one of our options. But because that one doesn't work very well because of timing, we appropriated to his contingency fund. Rather than taking this little tiny piece of the action, which is something real unique and different, and waging war, I mean, I've got a good idea there. It's worth a try. I mean, we tried everything else, and we haven't thought of that, and that's we're going to lose it maybe, but let's try it. But rather than risking this bill on it, why don't we try it somewhere where we don't mind tying the bill up in court or having an injunction against it or anything like that? Because if we lose on this, I don't want to risk it. You know, maybe you don't mind, but I think there's a lot of federal programs that all of us are going to be feeling the heat on, and we can't do much about all of them, but at least some of them we could have something to say on. I hate to risk those programs because of the fight. And I'm just saying, we create this situation by the way we budget in the budget bill. If you wanted to say the governor cannot receive and expend additional federal funds, he can't. We give him the power to do it because we can delegate it to him, but we can't delegate it to ourselves. That's what the court said, essentially. So we delegated him in the budget bill. We can just take that line out of there and say he can't. This is all he's got. And then there's no question. And budget and audit can't do it, and neither can he. And just stop him cold. And if he wants to spend more money, he has to call the legislature into session, and we have to approve it. And we get 100% control. So we can have that control if we want it, but we can't delegate it to the Budget and Audit Committee. And I think any circuitous route to delegate that to Budget and Audit is going to be shot down. And even a questionable one's going to end up in court and delay things and risk this program. So let's fight it in the Budget Act if you want. We can do it there.
Representative Carney?
Well, to respond, I think the key statement that you made is that we all agree how important these programs are, and I can't believe that the governor and the Budget and Audit could not agree on the most important issues, which means that the issues that would be in dissension, the ones that they could not possibly agree on, would be the ones that have to wait for the next session. You know, and I don't believe the governor would refuse to spend the money for those programs that they could agree on in order to prove a point and then come back the next session and, see what I'm saying?
It's technically, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Minkins.
I'm sorry to debate this, but I think it's an important point. The one of the problems you have is that the entire bill, the entire appropriation bill, would become effective when they reach this agreement. The funds are going to be needed throughout the entire year, and if we could make that determination that quickly, why not just go ahead and make it now? But the problem is that they're going to come in, you know, one appropriation at a time. These requests, you know, it's going to as they run short or as some problem gets put together, we're not going to have all the information in October. And so what you're going to say, or even in September. And so until they reach agreement on the whole thing, no program could get any of its money. And I think that it's not possible to reach an agreement on the whole thing because the information is going to be coming in, you know, in bits and pieces. And it's probably going to be another continuing resolution in October instead of a federal budget. We're not going to know for sure until they actually don't get their money in different places and at different times during the whole year. So until you got every piece in place, you couldn't spend any of it under your scenario.
Representative Carney, if you'd like to work the wording with Mr. Hogan regarding an amendment to something like that under page 2, line 24, is, you know, you'd probably entertain a motion like that, placing that request, if it doesn't fall through the expenditure through the next legislative session, is I'd entertain a motion when you get the proper wording on this. We do have 3 or 4 people here to testify on this particular bill, and I'd like to take them up, and we'd come right back into it. And during that time, if you'd get the amendment ready, I'd appreciate it.
I'll do that.
Okay. Is there any further questions of Mr. Hogan? I have Gordon Jackson. Did you have?
Well, you can move the bill today.
Yeah, I'm going to try.
Just thinking about getting Barrier over here. I think it's
Mr. Carney?
You know, pretty important to see it rush through.
We'll get him over here. I got 3 to testify in, but
well, Mr. Jackson?
Cousin. Chairman, I'll try to be brief. The two bills that you have in front of you, the Finance Committee and the State Affairs Committee, there was one big change on page 2, line 5. The change was basically the Finance Committee wording was that State Department shall submit their request for finance and the programs under this Act to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. From these requests, the department shall compile a list of state departments eligible to receive money from the fund. The Department of Community and Regional Affairs shall also compile a list of other agencies. And the State Affairs deleted that language, and it now reads, State Department shall submit their request for state finance and the programs under this Act to the governor. Non-state agencies and organizations shall submit their request to the state finance and the programs under this Act to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. So under one, you have a State Department that takes all the proposals from all the departments throughout state government and sifts through them to determine, you know, whether or not that program is needed. That is would be locked into the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. And they would then submit it to the governor for recommendations on funding. The other bill, State Affairs, just runs it right directly to the governor, except for non-state agencies. And in my opinion, if you took the Finance Committee language, you would probably need a fiscal note that basically provided more staff to analyze, you know, the proposals from each state department and develop criteria, you know, concerning which programs to continue under the state departments. And basically that language was placed in that just for that reason. You know, you need criteria. You need people to look not only at the merits of the proposal, but also to watch the federal budget cycle to determine what kinds of changes are going to be happening as a result of President Reagan's proposals. Now, a lot of those changes have been significant over the past year, and just within state government alone, the drop in federal receipts has been dramatic due to the federal budget cutting fever. In 1981, our federal receipts totaled $271 million, according to the appropriations bill that passed last year. This year, according to the governor's estimate, we're only expecting $209 million, a loss in just 1 year of $62 million. Now, that's just the state departments that are down there. And in non-state agencies, we estimate a loss of at least $50 million. That includes some programs in the Bureau of Indian Affairs and nonprofit corporations. We took a poll of nonprofit corporations over the summer, and a poll of eight of them. The last fiscal year, they had a total of $36 million in federal receipts. And this year, their total it totals $26 million. So just in eight nonprofit associations, you lost approximately $10 million. By law, the federal budget should be completed by September 30th and a new appropriation bill signed on October 1. This past year was not a normal year with the direction to cut the federal budget. The new fiscal year began with a continuing resolution which ran the federal government for 50 days. On November 24th, 1981, another continuing resolution was enacted and ran the federal government for 21 days. On December 15th, 1981, Congress enacted another continuing resolution extending federal governmental operations until March 31, 1982. Now that's coming up just around the corner, and I expect perhaps most of the appropriations bill would have passed by then. But even today, the appropriations bill that runs health and human services still has not passed. And probably going to another continuing resolution. And each continuing resolution had a cut attached to it. For instance, there was language in the December continuing resolution which said there's going to be a 4% cut mandated in all programs except for the military. And to give you an idea of how those continuing resolutions affected state government, you only have to look at the Department of Labor, the job service programs, and other things like that. And you only have to look at the state requests. In the Department of Labor, they requested general fund, state general fund money amounted to $10,319,000. Federal funds receipts amounted to $22,875,300. So that's the only state department with considerable amounts of federal money. And each continuing resolution lopped off funds. And you saw in the other federal budget impact fund that was enacted, amounting to $5 million, considerable amounts of the request came from the Department of Labor. And it makes a lot of sense because they have the most federal money. Other departments that have a lot of federal money includes the Department of Health and Social Services, the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. They lost $18 million last year in federal funds. University of Alaska, the Department of Education, the rest of the state departments don't have significant amounts. And Mr. Chairman, with the differences in fiscal years, ours beginning on July 1, theirs on October 1, this proposed piece of legislation makes eminent good sense. We still don't have a fiscal year or 1982 budget, and many of the decisions concerning the fiscal year 83 budget will not be made until long after the Alaska legislature adjourns. In addition, the president's budget includes many significant proposals. If you take a look at it, one of the big sweeping changes that he's proposing to this Congress includes a swap of the federal funding of Medicaid and the states taking aid to families with dependent children and food stamps. Now, the last time I looked at the figures, Medicaid in Alaska amounted to $27 million. Now, that's the amount of money that the federal government is going to take in the next fiscal year. But AFDC, Aid to Families with Dependent Children, We spent $53 million last year in food stamps at around $29 million, and that amounts to over $80 million in federal money that the state may have to assume because of the swap. Now, taking a look at some of the other recommended changes that the president is proposing, he's proposing the creation of many more block grants, and with the block grants coming to states, he's decreasing the amounts of money. For instance, the block grants coming into the state, he lopped 25% off right off the top of the head, right off the top of the budget before it came to the state of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. Add a 12% inflationary factor, we lose 37% right within the state government. Now he's proposing several more block grants, and he really feels strongly that states have complete responsibilities for health, education, and social services funding. Now that's a real big proposal of his, and it's something that he's continuing to push, and I suspect he's going to have a considerable amount of success like he did last year. And I just want to close right now. I know we have several witnesses with a statement that, you know, we're already 6 months into the federal fiscal year and we still don't have a complete federal budget. And information from Washington, D.C., and I've been monitoring it for over 8 years and maybe even a year, and we've been watching it closely for the past 10 years on very specific programs. Information tells me we can expect more of the confusion and more of the uncertainties concerned regarding budget amounts this year. And this proposed piece of legislation, in my opinion, because of all that I said, makes eminent good sense. Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Is there any question of Mr. Jackson? If not, thank you very much, Mr. Jackson.
Thank you.
Did we have a John Tabor from Department of Health? Is there any comments?
I have a further testimony.
Okay, thank you. I have Michael Demand.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Finance Committee, thank you. I represent the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes here today. I have a letter from the President of the Central Council, John Hope, that I'd like to read into the record, as well as some additional comments. First of all, with regard to Gordon Jackson's well-done, thoughtful, and I think thorough study of the overall impact of federal budget cuts, I think that that the kind of information that he's assembled is, and I think he would probably agree, is probably a minimum cut level. And I think his forecast of further cuts to come is very accurate. The letter is to Chairman Adams. This letter is to support the committee substitute for House Bill 876, the Federal Budget Impact Fund, and to comment on one implementation concern. The concern we have is that because of federal and state cutbacks in operational funding within state government, for both overall budget and targeted programmatic cutting purposes, there will be a state agency scramble for the monies allocated to the fund. This is to be expected and is not necessarily a negative process. However, the mechanisms proposed to collect state and non-state requests seem to give state agencies both a head start in terms of paperwork. They simply submit their request to the governor, while non-state entities go through the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, which would probably need some gear-up time to develop forms, etc. And in terms of access, since state agencies go to the governor, non-state go to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs and then are compiled into a list, which is then submitted and perhaps recommended upon or commented upon through the process. Since the demand for dollars is expected to exceed the appropriation, it is likely that some non-state entities may find Mother Hubbard's federal impact cupboard empty because of the more direct access available to state mice. We do not have a proposed solution to a proposed problem, only ask that these concerns be made part of your legislative history of this bill. We support the legislation, we know it's needed, we wish the fund were larger, and we applaud the sponsors for their efforts in this difficult area. In addition to those comments, Mr. Chairman, in looking at the bill even more closely and with some of the comments that have been going on with regard to the powers of budget and audit, etc., seems to me that there are a couple of things that should be noted. First of all, I think that probably, although it's not specifically written within the bill, that you do mean to exclude capital projects for which federal funding has been withdrawn. For those of you not familiar, EDA programs include not only the planning programs, but also, in some cases, loan guarantee, grant programs for docks, harbors, water construction funds. I assume that you mean to exclude those programs. However, no discussion has been held with regard to that. Reason being, for exclusion being that we could build a coal storage we need to, in Yakutat, and use most of the $20 million right there, if that's the case. The other question is that in terms of the difficulty of trying to reach an agreement with the governor between the Budget and Audit Committee or the legislature and the governor on priorities, might be suggested, though I have no wish to hold the bill up, that you may want to target the $20 million either by priority areas, without giving a percentage or something like that to it, but by priorities, or by economic geography of a fashion known in the trade as a lower scale of standard of living adjustment areas or those kinds of factors, or a combination of the two, just to give some general guidelines to both the Budget and Audit Committee and the governor in selecting projects for funding. A third adjustment that might be of some interest, I assume, and we share the concern of Representative Bettesworth, some members of the committee, who indicated that in some cases you've made programmatic cuts, very specific programmatic cuts, with regard to positions and programs that you have some fear of the $20 million being used to fund. And I think that's a very valid concern. So I assume that programs which have been excluded or cut for some reason would be outside the purview of the $20 million fund. The other thing is, with regard to just an example of the difficulty perhaps in gearing up this mechanism within Department of Community and Regional Affairs, in some of the other measures that have come before legislature this session, we've heard testimony that, for example, in the per capita revenue sharing programs, that a large number of communities did not apply for money that was a very simple application procedure to get. In other words, you had to agree to a couple of conditions and put a budget in. And the reasons that were advanced in testimony before House Community and Regional Affairs Committee by representatives of the department were that, first of all, the measure came screaming out in the last minute of the session last year. Second of all, they had other programs that were representing expansion, so they had a little difficulty in getting the word out. And thirdly, that they didn't have the staff to really adequately rev up enough interest in the program so that some of these communities would apply. What I'm worried about with regard to this mechanism is that if, one, you have state agencies with direct access to the governor, who don't have to go through a form kind of a procedure, and I assume that they can, right after the bill passed, they could put in a request to the governor. Secondly, that non-state agencies are going to have to go through a little more lengthy procedure, and I think probably DCRA would attempt to implement it with as little problem as possible, but still another procedure, and then that list all has to be put together and then presented to the governor, that really, for those areas that are removed from urban centers, whether they're a small community institution or whether they're even a regional nonprofit, which is removed from the urban areas, that the $20 million very well may be long, long gone before any of those agencies have a chance to even get in and talk about their need. Same time, to set up some kind of a mechanism where you only spend $5 million every 3 months or something is not really adequate, too. But I think perhaps... I don't know if it's an amendment to the bill, but perhaps in just your discussion, some direction could be given with regard to the legislative history of this bill so that your feelings on those kinds of aspects of the bill would be of some direction to the administration. Mr. Chairman, that's all.
Okay, thank you. Is there any question, Mr. DeMann? If not, thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Meekins.
Mike, do you have any language on any of the suggested changes that you have?
No, I don't. I would welcome the opportunity to work with staff or others. We have down at our office some examples of other kinds of legislation, national and others, that do talk about targeting and in the kind of terminology that probably would be acceptable if it was of interest to you.
Thank you, Mr. DeMand. For the committee's information, I'm going to hold these two bills over till 1 p.m. tomorrow so that Representative Cotton can look into the legality of what you wanted to do. Representative Carney, you wanted to also look at possible amendments. I do have a couple of announcements to make that if there's any member that want any bills out of House Finance, I'd appreciate them. Let me know so I can get them out before April 5th. But after April 5th, I will still be hearing bills out of House Finance. But I'd recommend any bills that would pass the session be out of House Finance by April 5th.
House bills.
House bills, yes. And then on Tuesday, I'm going to hear House Bill 666 in House Finance. Okay. Everybody know that's the whole budget. And if you have anything to bring before me, Representative Cotton, I'd appreciate it. Any new information on anything in all of 18 budgets, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. What time?
Pardon me?
What time?
I'll give it till Monday.
No, I'll say what time?
1:30.
1:30 on Tuesday.
Yeah, and we also have a student loan also on Tuesday. I want to close out House Bill 666. It's the operating budget and send it down to rules. And hopefully maybe on Friday or the first next week we can hear the operating budget on the floor.
You intend to move the bill out on Tuesday?
I intend to move it out on Tuesday. There's nothing further to come before us. House Finance is adjourned.
You said we're going to meet tomorrow at 1:30.
Yeah. House Finance, please come to order. This afternoon, we're going to take up Senate Bill 666, House Bill 165, and again, we're going to take up House Bill 876 and 872, and then we're going to close out the legislature budget. This afternoon, I'd like to assign these particular bills to Representative Cuddy, House Bill 847. It's the Permanent Fund Dividends. Representative Cuddy, House Bill 853, the same subject. To Representative Chuckwalk, House Bill 639, Supplement Employee Benefits. To Representative Meekins, HJR 41, Defining Appropriation. To Representative Cuddy, House Bill 743, Contingency Distribution of Permanent Fund Dividends. And at this time, we're going to take up House Senate Bill 666, which is sponsored by Senator Fahrenkamp, which established a mining loan fund as a revolving loan fund. This bill provides the appropriation to the loan fund will not lapse. Repayment of interest and principal will also be deposited into the fund. A fiscal note from the Division of Loans and Veterans Affairs indicate the bill has no fiscal impact on the agency. This particular piece of legislation was assigned to Representative Bettisworth. And at this time, I turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mining Loan Fund was established 3 years ago principally through the efforts of Senator Fahrenkamp, and that first year there were $10 million deposited to the fund. The next year there was $20 million deposited to the fund, and this year we're proposing $15 million for a total fund of $45 million. Under normal statutes, these loan funds, the principal and interest repayments go back into the general fund, so that the fund has to be constantly replenished, so to speak. This bill simply would make that into a revolving loan fund so that once it built up to the point of maybe $60 to $75 million, wouldn't need any more additional appropriations from the legislature. The funds would be a truly revolving loan fund for principal and interest would go into the fund and sustain itself. And there's no additional appropriation through this bill. We have the money in the loan bill, and with that, I'd ask any questions or
okay.
Move the
bill.
Any
questions? Senator Fahrenkamp was going to be here to testify. Representative Hilbert.
Thank you. You know how much money's in the...
Mm-hmm. There's $30 million in it right now, and if the loan bill that we're proposing this year passes, there'll be another $15 for a total of $45.
The fiscal note doesn't reflect what we would have received in principal and interest repayments.
Fiscal note is supposed to be relating to what additional money it might take for maintenance, operation, additional state personnel or facilities to carry out the intent of the legislation. And the people that are doing that are already intact. They have an office in Fairbanks. I would move the bill, Mr. Chairman.
And ask for unanimous consent?
Ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? Senate Bill 666, moved out of House Finance. The next one we've got is before us, again, is House Bill 165. That's sponsored by Representative Hurlburt. It creates the Public Utility Revolving Loan Fund within the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. The House Labor and Commerce Committee had a committee substitute which proposed the creation the Telecommunications Revolving Loan Fund. The House Finance Subcommittee, to which the bill was assigned, proposes a second committee substitute to establish the Telecommunications Public Utility Revolving Loan Fund. The Division of Business Loans indicate that the fiscal impact of the original bill is $203,000. This particular bill was assigned to Representative Cuddy, who is not here at this particular point. And Representative Hurlburt, you're the sponsor of this piece of legislation. Do you have any comments?
Can we move it on down the bottom, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 165 be passed out of committee with individual recommendation and ask unanimous consent.
Which one?
165.
Objection? Representative Cotton?
Yeah, there was something I wasn't clear on. I want to ask about the. Seems like there's still a confusion about the jurisdiction of the Department of Administration as opposed to the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. It's a loan program, like other loan programs, probably ought to remain in the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. Maybe it's already happened that way, but on page two, it appears that the Department of Administration still plays a significant role here. Is that consistent with the...
I believe you are correct, Representative Cotton, as far as addressing that. I think also
I'll withdraw my amendment for my motion.
Thank you, Representative Carney has removed his motion. Representative Cotton, you are correct that the loan program should be under Department of Commerce and Economic Development instead of as it is in the in this particular bill. I think the reason the subcommittee put it under administration, they thought it belonged there with telecommunications section, but you are correct.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure how to change that because, like on page one, we start out here, we create the fund and we say that the administration has to authorize the loans and then the Department of Administration shall make and administer the loans. So I'm not sure how to change that to put it within the bounds of one department. Perhaps, I think I brought this to your staff's attention earlier. I don't know if they've worked up the appropriate amendments. Chairman, perhaps I think Representative Herbert wanted to put this off till the end of today's business.
Yeah, just for this purpose, there's a couple of little technical changes there.
Okay, if there's no objection, I'm going to go into this after, at the last. Is there anybody that would like to testify on 165 before we pass it over? If not, Alex? Okay, thank you, Mr. Hills. You're with the telecommunications? Okay, very good. The next two we have is before you is House Bills 876 and House Bill 872. And we had taken this up yesterday, and there were some legal technicalities that Representative Cotton, you wanted to check into, and also Representative Carney, that perhaps that you had any amendments on this particular piece of legislation. Representative Carney?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have two proposed amendments to put before the committee. I'd like to take them one at a time. And the first amendment that I'd like to deal with is on page two.
Which bill?
876. Mm-hmm.
you're looking at the...
Page 2, line 24, after shall...
And you're looking at the committee substitute for House Bill number 876, State Affairs, right?
You refer to State Affairs, page 21682, I have.
This is, the one you should be looking at is 31082.
I don't seem to have that.
I'm not sure.
It should be in your packet, sir.
Here's the next one. Here's the next one.
I have a second year.
Give it up.
Your assistant, but I'm supposed to make that one. Bear with me just a minute, Mr. Chairman.
I think that's the sure, you got to have an amount, otherwise it's discretion.
All right, just no change. Page 2, line 24, after shall.
Right.
Delete the total rest of that paragraph through line 28 and insert in its place the words not authorize the proposed expenditures and may submit the proposed expenditures in the form of a requested supplemental appropriation of the first session of the 13th legislature convening in January 1983. Essentially what that would do would say that if they didn't agree on which ones to fund, that the governor would come to the legislature with a recommended supplemental for those ones they didn't agree on.
This is pretty close to the wording that Mr. Hogan had recommended.
Mr. Hogan typed this up for me, Chairman.
Okay. Is there any objection to the motion to include amendment to this bill, starting with line 24th and starting after the word shall, deleting all that section and placing Representative Carney's new amendment? Was that a motion, Mr.?
Moving as unanimous consent, Mr. Chairman.
Any objection? Amendments accepted.
Chairman, amendment number two that I have.
Representative Carney, from now on, if you have any amendments on any bills, would you just have them duplicated and passed around? So, please, the next one.
Yeah, thank you. This one here is relatively simple.
Okay.
Chairman. Would be on page 3, line 1, for the effective date.
Yeah.
After effect. Strike out immediately and insert takes effect when the legislative budget audit and the governor have signed an agreement on those federal programs to be funded. It'll be tied to the effective date. Move and ask unanimous consent for the option amendment.
There's objection. Would you restate that motion again for Representative Cotton's benefit?
Page 3, line 1, strike the word immediately. And insert in place of immediately when the legislative budget and audit and governor have signed an agreement on those federal programs to be funded.
In accordance?
Yes.
Gibson Cotton?
Yeah, I agree with what you're trying to do there. I'm not sure that there's going to, I think there's going to be a problem because if we appropriate, first of all, we create this fund and we appropriate money to it. But then we say that the fund doesn't exist until there's an agreement. So where does the money go in the meantime?
State and church.
Well, where it always is in the general fund until the effective date clause. Until the effective date.
Okay. But now we're talking about. Maybe I better listen to that one more time. Maybe it does work. It seems like there's a process that's described here as to how the state departments have to go through CRA. And, if none of that takes effect until there's already an agreement, it just seems like it's sort of a...
if you had a 90-day effective day clause, theoretically they should be able to get their act together before the effective day clause anyway. And if it were 90 days in this case, however long it takes them to agree is the length of the time before the effective day takes effect.
Okay.
You moved,
yeah? Yeah, I removed my objection. I'm still confused, but I won't make any further objections.
Any further objections to that? Second Amendment just passed on House Bill 872. I'm sorry, that was 876. We have 876 and 872 before you.
The chair will entertain a motion to move out 876. We'll take them at one at a time as amended.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Ask unanimous consent.
Any objection? House Bill 876 is moved out of finance. We have the appropriation bill before you. It's 872 in the sum of $20 million.
There's an amendment on this in your folder.
You also have before you, it's the House Bill 872, Representative Carney. Is there an amendment?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, on page 1, line 16, or line 14, delete the effective date of the act and insert the following language.
Would you read it, please, for the record?
This act takes effect on the effective date of the written agreement between the governor and the majority of the membership of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee regarding the allocation of grants from the Federal Budget Impact Fund to state and other agencies for the continuation of programs affected by reductions in federal appropriations. I could provide the clerk with a
copy. Okay, we're
doing
it. Move unanimous consent to the adoption amendment.
Is there any objection to that amendment? If not, your amendment passes, Representative Carney. Is there any further action on House Bill number 872?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hulbert.
I move 872.
Reported out.
Individual recommendations.
Okay. With amendment. Is there any objection? If not, 872 is passed out. We're back to your House Bill 165, Representative Hulbert. Would you like more time on it?
Please. They're drafting that.
Okay, we're going to take a 5-minute recess, and Amy, would you call Representative Malone's office, and we're going to close out the legislature budget.
Do we have a cut sheet on that, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, we're going to. This afternoon, we're going to cover the legislature's budget, and what I'd like to do is I've got Gary here, and I'd like to go line item. As you can see, what I've done is from FY82's budget, I've cut it back by approximately $6 million. And you'll see just one or two increases in there. One of the two increases you'll see, instead budgeted for 90 days, I've budgeted for 110 days, which I think is a realistic number. The other thing you'll see an increase is the salaries and allowances. That's because of the fact that they raised the per diem rates for the legislature from $67 to $80. Going down the budget categories, if there's any components that you want me to stop at, and I will allow also Representative Malone, who we're trying to contact this time, to go a few items that he might object to on this particular budget. But going down the category under budget not at commission. The committee expense, which is the budget not at committee. Yes.
I don't understand how you're looking. I think I got the same sheet you do. He's on the legislative finance. You say it was a 10% reduction from the legislative request, and it shows 21%. So I'm trying to figure out which figures you're using.
Okay, Gary.
Mr. Chairman, legislative audit is actually at figure 82, and so the 8% reduction that you see, Representative Cotton, is correct. The legislative finance reduction, though, is substantially more than 10% because the subcommittee has reduced the House Finance Committee Chairman and the Senate Finance Committee Chairman's contractual allowance from a requested $295,000 to $50,000.
Okay. And then in addition, the salary increases for legislators and legislative employees don't appear in your budget, right? They appear, they'll either show up or not show up in House Bill 685.
Yes. Okay. We're at the committee expenses at this particular time, and they had requested 877.4. I took off practically all their contractual money of 600,000 there and reduced them from 4 employees down to 2 employees. That's what the house number of 248.7. Is there any questions on that one?
If not from where we're here, go from legislature council on down with salaries, as I'm going to turn each of these over to Gary for explanation from that line on down.
Mr. Chairman, as you already pointed out, the legislative salaries and allowances was increased because of the increase in per diem and the increase in legislators' pay rate in 1981.
Any questions? Leadership.
Leadership. Mr. Chairman, in the leadership account for fiscal year 1983, there was a request of $2.9 million for personal services, and what that was is to cover the session interim help during the interim period. The council budgets those people in two different places. There's 66 positions. This is secretaries and AAs for individual legislators. The subcommittee has reduced that request from 8 months' worth of funding in the leadership account to 2 months' worth of funding, with a legislative intent statement that those 2 months are to be May and June of 1983. So what that amounts to is there will be no interim staff for the individual legislators under this account during July through December of this year. That then also leaves in contractual services under the leadership account a discretionary fund of $250,000 for the Senate President and $250,000 for the Speaker.
Let me make sure I understand that. That means that there's going to be no salaries paid between July and December of 1982 out of the leadership budget?
That's correct.
None?
None.
What about the full-time employees? There aren't going to be any full-time employees?
There are some positions where he'll get down to them in a different category, Representative Cuttings.
So if there were any interim committees that would normally be funded under the leadership budget...
That's correct.
There won't be any employees hired by this committee.
And speaker. Last year, you know, the slush fund of both the Senate and the House was approximately $2.5 million for each side. This year, we've cut them down to $250,000 each. And if they do feel they need staff or interim committees, they've got that option.
Also, they can hire people.
They can hire if they would like to.
But what's the intent say then?
Mr. Chairman, the intent says personal services of $1,138,000 fund 66 sessions / interim employees during May and June of 1983.
Okay.
Continue.
Mr. Chairman, executive administration, essentially what this does is deletes the Washington, D.C. office and the $142,000 worth of money that they've asked for training for new staff, new legislative staff. The subcommittee allowed $6,000 for training 25 new legislators for 3 days. And that's all the changes in there.
So any questions on that? If not, we'll go on to the next one.
Administrative services. We hear they had asked for a 120-day session. That was reduced, as Chairman stated before, to 110 days. They asked for 6 new positions, which were deleted, and the salary and benefit increase was deleted in accordance with going in House Bill 685.
Okay. House research.
House research. The subcommittee recommendation is $300,000 total expenditures with 4 full-time employees, 1 part-time employee, and a half temporary employee. The agency had requested 9 full-time, 2 part-time, and 1 full-time, 1 full temporary.
Representative Cotton.
This is an area that I was about to see you put something back in there. Something I think that everybody's really been able to take pretty full advantage of. And I know that once the free conference process starts, there may be an opportunity to establish what I think is probably more appropriate, a joint research agency, and maybe take the House money and the Senate money, put it together, and come up with a realistic situation that actually I think occurs now. I think the Senate makes use of House Research Agency at least occasionally now, and they've proved to be the best professional help the legislature's had for quite some time. So I'd recommend a higher figure there to bring it back to at least a 10 years level. one of those situations where we're sort of cutting back on our own ability to function. However, I have a sneaking suspicion that that a motion to increase it probably wouldn't pass, so I wanted to bring it to your attention that it's going to be something that's going to remain a priority item for myself, and I think many people in the legislature agree with that.
Okay, thank you.
We have a question from Representative Fuller.
To answer Representative Cotton's question and his philosophy on the thing, if we're not going to have a bunch of interim committees, Sam, I think that the staff that they've got will be able to handle any requests from people to try to get some things prepared for the oncoming year.
Well, if I could, that's a question that continues, and some people look at, as an example, the legal services department over here and say, well, there are a few months, especially in election year, when nobody uses them, so I suppose we could lay them off during that period of time, but the likelihood of them continuing to work for the legislature, I think, is reduced when you do that. I think you find that in a lot of different types of business and so forth. I know that the school district probably had that problem. People yelled at you for keeping too many people on when there wasn't school in session, right? But you have to keep them if you want them to work full time. So I think that there are projects that they could be directed to work on that are obvious issues that will be before the legislature next year, regardless of who's here. So I think that there is some merit to what you're saying, but I think there's sort of a dilemma that we're put into, because if you let everybody go, then you have to start back over the following year in order to get some really professional type researchers on board.
Well, I can appreciate that. I was for zeroing them out, as I did once before, but at the same token, I argued to keep the present proposal intact so that they could take advantage of some people that wanted to have some work done. So I wouldn't be in favor of increasing it any. I argued to hold it. But,
anything else, Representative Cotton?
No, I just wanted to just notify that I'll be bringing this up at a later time.
Thank you. Would you go ahead, Representative?
And the legal services.
Mr. Chairman, the subcommittee held legal services at fiscal year 1980 to authorize. They requested three new positions and offered denied.
So any questions? If not, we'll go down to session expenses.
Mr. Chairman, the session expenses reflects an increase from fiscal year 1982 authorized because of the budgeting at 110-day session, but it reflects a decrease from what the agency requested because they had budgeted for 120-day session.
So any questions to that thing?
Proceed.
Council and subcommittees.
Mr. Chairman, we left $200,000 in the council and subcommittees account and added legislative intent saying $200,000 includes $50,000 for hosting the Western Conference of State Legislators in Fairbanks.
Question?
Where are we right now? I'm sorry.
Council and subcommittees, Representative Cotton.
Does that, how much money do we have to spend on that is projected for the cost of that?
$50,000. We put some intent language so it will be spent on that Western Conference, Representative Cotton.
Well, can we come back to this one if necessary?
Yes. The next one we've got is office space rentals.
Mr. Chairman, basically this is reduced to fiscal year 1980 to authorize, except that the agency then requested some travel funds which were deleted altogether.
Representative Fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask a question. You know that we have a very serious problem with the print shop, and there isn't the proper room there. There's a possibility of getting into the old building across the street here. What would we have to do to get the monies? We don't know how much it's going to cost, but we do have to move it. Where are we going to be at during the interim on this?
Well, hopefully that we don't have to spend too much money, that we can get it out of leadership for relocation.
Representative Lamone?
Sure, that probably would most fairly be funded in any capital budget request or consideration that might be thing would be useful there if there was some analysis by the rules committees of that option. It was considered in the past, and because of the cost of the alternate space rejected, you know, very high cost on the rental. But there would also be substantial capital costs.
Well, we're working on it now, Representative Malone, and if we move the print shop, then we are freeing up a possible committee room in 9 offices or 12 offices, no committee room here in the Capitol. So we're going to have some money involved, and perhaps that's a place that, but you don't encourage me very much when you say Capitol, because I don't think there's going to be very much money there.
Representative Cotton, you had a question?
The move of the print shop to the old State Office building?
Yes.
Where is it? Is there room over there? What, in the basement?
Excellent. The first floor is just real good.
Is there a cost estimate on the move?
Well, I'm working on it right now. Because this just freed up, because they're going to move health, education, social services out of there down to the Gold Belt office or something.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. Get as many legislators as possible in the Capitol building.
Anything else on office? Go ahead.
The next item is the equipment account.
Mr. Chairman, all the left in the equipment account is $93,000 to make the second payment on the computer.
Representative Cotton?
I'll yield. That's the only other question I had. Why did we cut the equipment account so drastically?
It was my feeling that the furniture you have in your office, you can use them for another year, and we don't have to go out every year to buy new office and furniture equipment. And I believe that both the voting machines are still inoperable. They can still be utilized. They had placed for new voting machines at $175. And the other thing I've kept in, though, is 25 new statutes for hopefully 25 new statutes. I've also zeroed out the new vans that we usually get every year. And the other thing is upgrading the teleconferencing, as I zeroed out $54,000 there. Also is zeroed out the Xerox machine for the Anchorage office of $55,000, and also equipment in the Anchorage and office equipment. I believe this year we can live with the present equipment that we have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Cotton?
First of all, the $93,000 is a second payment on our computer system.
On a 5-year payment, yes.
I also understood that there was some other upgrades or other improvements that ought to be made to the computer system there, although I'm not sure how critical they are. I think it probably is critical to make the upgrades that are called for the teleconference system. I don't know about the rest of you, but the last teleconference I went to, there's about 20% of the time was wasted in making sure the equipment worked. And I think that as long as the Capitol's, it's always going to be quite a ways away from somebody, so I think that a teleconference network is an essential part of the business we're doing down here. I just hate to see that those improvements get cut out. I would ask you to reconsider that.
Any other questions on equipment? Go ahead. Representative Malone, did you have a question?
Mr. Chairman, I had some specific comments on certain areas in the budget submitted by Legislative Council, but I was going to wait till maybe some of those discussions might be taken care of, and then I would like to address them one at a time.
Thank you. We'll go ahead with the next item.
Public services.
Mr. Chairman, we have allowed fiscal year 1982 to authorize for public services, except in those line items where they asked for less this year in 83 than they had in 82. Those two line items were travel and commodities. So basically, this is the fiscal year 82 level.
Questions? Proceed.
We've placed back under the Senate Advisory Council, it's $300,000. It's similar to the House Research. And that has been added just recently here, Mr. Chairman. Is there any questions on that? going back to the last category on this page is the Office of the Ombudsman Program, and we funded that last year's level and placed no new employees on that particular category.
We had two holdovers. Representative Malone, you wanted to comment at this time on the total category?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The restrict my comments to some specific areas of the budget. One is that in the within the budget recommended by the council, within the area of executive administration, that item there. Last year, the legislature elected not to fund the Washington, D.C. office. Then, subsequent to that, the office was kept open. It's my understanding that that the leadership of the House and Senate did agree that that office should continue to be funded. I think it's approximately, I have the actual numbers here, but it's about $100,000, $109,700 is a budget level for the D.C. office, which includes a two-person staff there and the office expenses. That was partially funded from the Senate leadership account, and then the council allocated some remaining balances to it near the beginning of this session to continue through the fiscal year. So that's an issue there that I think probably needs to be looked at again. The funding for the D.C. office, of course, wouldn't be possible within 238.6, as recommended.
I'd like to respond to that particular issue, because I think there's a duplication of services in Washington, D.C. by having two offices out there. One is the governor's office is also out there, and also the executive administration. I think that we can provide service for Alaskans using the governor's office by closing down the executive administration office, and that's where I was coming at as far as closing the Washington, D.C. office.
Representative Fuller?
What is the staff in the governor's office? Does anybody know?
I don't know. Representative Malone?
Yeah, just one comment on it. One of the reasons for the eventual decision to allocate some balanced funds to that office to keep it open through the end of fiscal year sprang from the experience of a number of legislators who were working on the railroad issue, negotiating with the federal government on that issue over the past year. And so I think that that's where the change of heart came from, and found that office using those discussions.
But at any rate, I want to bring that issue up there as to as to what my understanding, generally what I think you probably really did want to see in the legislature. Moving down, I'm not, I don't have the comments on the changes in the budget on the administrative services section. Could I see those for a second, please? In this section here, last year's, as with the executive administration budget, was substantially trimmed back from the council's recommended figure last year, and I think this year the administrative services probably could function at that level, taking into account that the salary increases are being funded separately. What it does mean, it basically is for 2 years in a row that there has been no real increase in the public personnel there, and that I think eventually may cause problems with the legislature. But the next item, the House Research Agency, also I guess same time the Senate Advisory Council. I don't have any recommendations on the Senate figure, but I think with the reduction in the council subcommittee's area or the leadership budget, the parallel actions been taken in this legislature, that there are good reasons for funding that agency at the minimum fiscal year 81 level or status. Basically being that, as Representative Cotton pointed out, that very difficult to build and keep a good staff with fluctuating funding levels. And of course, I want to see it funded. $300,000 is better than a lower number, but I think that that has consistently been a conservative budget in the, and that the reduction of research is probably not a good idea, and I'd recommend the fiscal year 82 level of services as a minimum for that area. Council and subcommittees, items, $200,000. One of the budgets, one of the things you need to do with that budget, of course, is provide a certain amount of travel money, miscellaneous costs, probably on the order of about $50,000 maximum. Still have some substantial balance of funds, $50,000 in the current fiscal year allocated to those purposes, some of which may lapse. And the $50,000 we are committed for the Council of State Governments Western Conference in Fairbanks does need to be in the budget. It is. But the code commission, the budget is carried in that area, and that budget's on the order of about $200,000. It wouldn't be funded at that level, or if it were, it'd have to be funded at a substantially lower level. If the legislature wishes to continue the work of the code revision commission, then probably additional funds would have to be provided there. I don't think that the balance, the roughly $100,000, would be sufficient for that function, which traditionally has been budgeted in this area. They submit a budget to the council submits it to the legislature, and they have requested this year about $200,000 roughly is that budget. And I think the same argument applies to the public services division as to administrative services, that last year there was no increase in that area. It was held to a pretty much minimum budget salary increases. There was a request for expansion and upgrade, number of new positions, and they were not included in the budget last year, not included in the budget this year again. So that job of providing those services, I do think, become consistently more difficult for people working in that division. What I'm saying is 2 years in a row, they've been substantially reduced. And in connection with that, the equipment account, the $93,000 is necessary for the computer, and the other funds that Representative Adams mentioned were, I think, by statute required by new law books or new legislation. But a lot of the equipment in the teleconference system is old now. It's starting to go to pieces. It doesn't work. And some funds at a minimum probably should be made available there for replacing units that are past their useful service life. And I think that Representative Cotton mentioned that. The direct result is that you waste time, you lose people on the other end of the teleconference system, whatever. So I think that upgrade, at least for equipment, and some amounts probably necessary there. There was a figure that was recommended, I think, in the budget. Perhaps not all of that is necessary, including new equipment and upgrading of the equipment. $54,000, some amount for that purpose, I think makes sense in that area. And finally, it's not part of the council budget, but in my own comments on the ombudsman's budget are that it's one of the areas in state government where the average person on the street can get some accountability back. I mean, it's a person goes to bat the little guy. And as the size of our state government has increased rapidly, I think there is a loss of accountability. It's a question as to what carrying current or constant level of funding again for the Ombudsman's Office over three proposed fiscal years basically really means that the amount of public service available to an individual is declining because there are more and more calls, more and more requests each year, and more things to sort through. So I think the committee should look at that again as well. Aside from that, I don't have any comments on the budget. I think the most significant areas that need to be looked at, council budget, would be first the reduction research funds, secondly, the DC office area, and finally, the equipment accounts for the teleconference. And then I guess the policy decision whether or not to fund the Code Revision Commission, people who are on that commission of the legislature include Representative Brown and Senator Rohde. It might be that the members might want to hear from those people, but their budget would not be funded at the level recommended by the subcommittee.
Thank you. Representative Cotton?
I think it's Chuck Anderson now, isn't it? Can you take first place on it?
That's correct.
Reverend Fuller, you have a comment?
I was just going to say that we know that the Code Commission has just done a lot of revising, and of course there's bills that are the outcome of that. I wonder how important it is to keep they've done the work. Do we need them?
Representative Adams, did you have a comment?
Well, I didn't want to debate some of the things that Representative Malone has said, but I believe that $200,000 is sufficient enough to keep the administration review regulation, the Code Revision Commission together, the Blue Ribbon Commission, and still hosting the Western Conference in Fairbanks. One of the things that we're going to be doing is there's going to be 58 legislatures out there campaigning, and I believe if you're out there campaigning, you don't need to take care of some of these things, or you can do it through teleconference, wherever you may be at. One of the things he has commented also is perhaps upgrading some of the personal services in different programs, public services. But I think what's going to happen is the state is going to have to take a look at what other companies are doing, such as Boeing, such as some of the oil industry, as far as the employees are concerned. I think we're going to have to take a strong stand there and perhaps either reduce state employees throughout Alaska, not only in this budget, or eliminate the salary increases and benefits. I think we're going to have to take a choice here because of the declining revenues, and we're going to have to look at that very closely on that. And I have no objection as far as the teleconference equipment if there was anything that needed to be done as far as upgrading, and that amount for teleconference, like he has just stated, was in the amount of $54,000 on that. That's about all I have on this budget.
Thank you. Representative Cotton?
Who's going to pay Sharon here? Does that come out of the council budget?
Representative Malone has an answer, I think.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think that there are not funds to pay the account or pay the bill out of current funds, at least available to the council, and will be a letter coming to the finance committee's requesting appropriation for that purpose.
Okay, Representative Cotton?
That seems like, what's the deal? Didn't we settle and then we have to put it into an account? Isn't that what the court ordered us to do? We got to put the money someplace.
Thank you, sir. We didn't settle anything. We lost the lawsuit. Costs and damages and claims were awarded to the plaintiff, totaling about $139,000. And we have a court order to pay that. And that's where we are. It is on appeal, and a bond will be posted against the money that's paid. Until the bond is posted, the money doesn't have to be paid. The bond's not posted yet. But if it's on appeal, the legislature lost the case basically in trial court.
Representative Cotton?
I understand this. The subcommittee chairman said he'd be willing to support $54,000 for telecommunication, teleconference update, upgraded.
My cohort says too much.
Does the committee wish a short break, or shall we proceed
with this?
Is there any other questions on this particular subcommittee report?
Just $54,000.
Representative Teddy was first, I guess.
No questions. I just want to compliment the subcommittee. I think they've done a very good job, and I support their recommendations.
Representative Fuller was next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is the telecommunication equipment, is the in the equipment account? Whatever it is.
Right.
Is that right? Yes. Is $54,000 the correct amount?
That's correct.
Then I'd like to move that we restore $54,000 to the equipment account for the telecommunications equipment.
Discussion on the motion. You raise the question.
Question.
All those in favor, raise your right hand, please. Those opposed? 2, 3, 4. I think that's a tie. Let's see, 1, 2, 3.
The motion failed.
Is there other items on the budget? Representative Cotton.
Mr. Chairman, I'm noting that the FY81 leadership budget was $821,000. And then due to complications, we went up to over $5 million in FY82. I'd move that we, instead of 1638, approve the figure of $816,000 for the leadership budget.
$816,000?
Just to comment on that, I'll probably end up withdrawing the motion here, but I still don't understand what the situation is there as far as whether or not we're going to have interim employees and why it's double the FY81 budget. Maybe you guys could just spend a couple more minutes on that, and I think I'd end up withdrawing the motion.
Okay. Under leadership?
Yeah. Apparently that's for the House and Senate, so does that necessarily divide evenly? Does the Senate get 816, the House gets 816, is that the way that works? Or 818 or 19, I guess it is. 819.
Mr. Chairman, in this component, first of all, I'm not 100% sure that I'm correct on fiscal 81, but I believe in fiscal 1981 there were no session help budgeted in the leadership account. Last year there was no session help budgeted in the leadership account per se. It was just a straight split between the House and Senate, and it was discretionary funds. This year, what was requested was for the Senate, 23 session interim professional secretaries and 17 session interim professional assistants. Now, the interim part of the funding is in the leadership account. The session part is in what's called session expenses. Okay, same people. For the House, they requested 16 secretaries as opposed to 23 for the Senate and 17 professional assistants as opposed to 17 for the Senate. First thing the subcommittee did is reduce the Senate's requested secretaries down to 16 to match it. And then deleted 75% of the funding to take it from 8 months funding during the interim to 2 months funding during the interim.
So I got that. I understand that part of it. So you only have 2 months of interim employees. That's May and June of 83. Okay.
In addition to that,
then there's $250,000 for the speaker and $250,000 for the president for cash account.
Yes.
So then what else? And is that the total? Okay. I remove my motion.
Thank you. Any other items on the budget? Any other questions? I'd entertain a motion for action. Representative Cuddy.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the subcommittee's recommendation for legislative budget and incorporated in House Bill, 666.
Ask for
unanimous consent.
I got it. Yes.
One objection. Those in favor of the motion, will you raise your right hand, please? Opposed? Motion's carried. Okay. Are we going to continue with the bill?
Yeah, we got one bill before us, and thank you, Representative Malone.
Thank
we'll
you.
Take a 5 minute.
Five minute break. Thank you.
Back on House Bill 166, we reviewed that earlier. It's sponsored by Representative Hurlburt. It creates the Public Utility Revolving Loan Fund within the Department of Commerce and Economic Development.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Agreement that this is all right as it stands. There's
This is the, there was one amendment that I think was in here. It was on page 2. That less than rate of interest is rubbed out, so I just want to bring out your attention. That's out. And other than that, I think the bill is...
Chairman, was there an amendment prepared while we had the break?
No, there wasn't. I think there was that. Are you looking at committee substitute for House Bill 165 Finance, President
yes.
Hilbert?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And would you restate what page?
Page 2. About line 17. Yeah.
Line 17.
Less than the rate of interest is taken out. Is line drawn to?
Is that a motion, Representative Hilbert?
Yes.
Is there any debate on that particular amendment? It's on page 2, line 17. The words less than the rate of interest is deleted.
Unanimous consent.
And unanimous consent has been asked for? So ordered. Representative Cotton.
On the eligibility for loans, my understanding is under the way the bill is written that not only would telephone utilities be able to get loans, but also cable TV utilities would. And I would move that language be inserted that would prohibit anybody but a telephone utility from getting a loan under this section. Ask unanimous consent.
Object.
There's objection. Would you restate the motion for the members, please?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have language right now, but if the motion passed, I would find the appropriate language to put in here. So the motion is to prohibit loans to anyone but telephone utilities.
Okay.
That would leave out cable TV operators or anything else that could be called telecommunications. So we're just talking about telephone utilities.
Okay. Ripson, Kiney?
Yeah, questions on the amendment. If I'm not mistaken, telephone utilities that provide cable television would be able to borrow for cable television installation, right?
The purpose of my amendment is to exclude everything but telephone service.
Good. Call for the question.
Question has been called for. All in favor of the amendment, signify by raising your hand. Opposed? Motion passes. We need the proper wording, Reps and Cotton, after this. To take care of that.
That was conceptual thing.
Right.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if it would be acceptable to the committee, I will get with Mr. Hogan and Hurlburt, and we'll draft it and put it into the committee substitute if it's adopted, that would do that and nothing else.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine with us. No objection? You have that authorization, Representative Cotton? Representative Hilbert?
Mr. Chairman, I move the bill with the fiscal note, with that amendment.
Jim.
All for the question.
And that includes a zero fiscal note also. Is that correct, Representative Hilbert?
That's correct.
All in favor of that motion, signify by raising your hand.
The what?
All in favor of your motion, signify by raising your hand. All opposed?
Mr. Chairman.
Motion fails.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Montgomery.
I move that we rescind our action on this recent vote.
There's a motion to rescind our recent action on House Bill 165. All in favor of that motion, signify by raising your hand. Now we're back to House Bill 165. Representative Hilbert.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Representative Hilbert.
I'd like to remake my motion. That we move committee substitute for House Bill number 165 Finance.
As amended.
As amended with a zero fiscal note.
Is there any objection?
House Bill 165 is moved out of House Finance. I do have an announcement for the finance members that on Monday we'll be hearing world oil prices and projected state revenues. We're going to start at 8 a.m. in the morning. You have a schedule before you in your packet, starting with Milt Barker, and at 8:15, Greg Erickson. Continue on at 1 to 2 with Greg Erickson, and at 2 p.m., Tom Williams, or an alternate, and at 4 p.m., Milton Lepton. Then starting also on Tuesday at 8 a.m., we have Fred Singer, and at 11 a.m., Robert Smith. So what we're going to do is look at the world's forecast as far as the oil revenue and Alaska's revenues. So that's what we're going to do on Monday and part of Tuesday. Okay. And you all have a schedule of all the bills starting with also on Tuesday, so we've got a heavy schedule next year, next week. And also you know that Tuesday is I plan to pass out House Bill 666 is the operating budget out of finance, and hopefully get it to the floor on Friday.
Right, Chairman, Wednesday and Thursday. I think after you get the news on Monday, you might have to take another look at 666.
That's right.
Use some cutting.
The, I heard it was about $750 million out there at the 30% percentile level.
Yeah. Well, the revenue forecast that the governor's office put out through Tom Williams today was still high. It was at $2.7 million. It took this afternoon, and that I have a copy. You can get a copy from my office. We have some copies.
2.7?
Yes. And I said it's too high. They've all. They've all got that. If there's no other business before House Finance is adjourned.
Okay. What?